Hi there. My name is David Simmons, and welcome to the third edition of Stuff We Like, the podcast where we talk about stuff we like, from food and drink to places to visit, new or old technology, and later on, hopefully next week, things to celebrate in the world of creative arts. If you have stuff you want to rave about, just contact me on Twitter, Facebook, WordPress, or email, and I'll give you my contact details at the end of the show. So here we go. Welcome to the third episode of Stuff We Like. The subject of today's podcast is travel. I suppose I mean that in a pretty loose sense, as travel is actually a very broad term. It could encompass modes of travel, discussions about the way travel has changed over the past 100 years or so. But essentially, I guess it's about places. Places which enchant us for whatever reason and which have sentimental properties, and which other listeners may hear us talking about and think, okay, I think it might be worth a visit. And I'm going to start with a beautiful small town in the heart of England, set on a hill which betrays the normally flat nature of the surrounding fens. A town which is frequently used for historic locations in television drama, and which boasts many glorious limestone buildings. I'm talking about Stamford in Lincolnshire. As you come into the town from the A1 exit, which leads you past the grounds of Burley House on the right, the road descends toward the road bridge which spans the River Welland, and you come under an oak beam which bears the name of the George Hotel, which welcomes you to Stamford. You'll immediately notice the prevalence of the local limestone in the buildings, whether they be shops, hotels, churches or houses, and as the road sweeps upward to the left, then to lead toward the centre of the town, the stone gives the town its perennially warm, sunny aspect. The town of Stamford is famous for its stone and the beauty of its historic streets, but also for many other things as well. The nearby Burley House was the seat of William Cecil, Lord Burley, Queen Elizabeth I's most trusted adviser, and of many generations of descendants following. And that's a house worth visiting. It also hosts the Burley Horse Trials every September. It is reputed that Queen Boudica herself crossed the River Welland when chasing a wayward legion of Romans. The newspaper, the Stamford Mercury, was established in 1695 and remains in print to this day. Other papers were apparently founded earlier, but it's the only paper of that age which is still in circulation. The town also gives its name to the celebrated Stamford Shakespeare Company, who perform plays in repertory every summer in the outdoor theatre in the nearby Tolthorpe Hall, where you can take a picnic in the grounds before seeing Slaughter at Agincourt or Mayhem in Dunsinane or Frolics in the Woods of Athens. So check out the Stamford Shakespeare Company when you visit Stamford. Not far away from Stamford is Rutland Water, near the town of Oakham, and this is a man-made lake, but it's quite beautiful and hosts quite an array of wildlife. And also you can hire bikes and cycle round the area, or you can just go for a walk around the perimeter of the reservoir, or go fishing, walking and cycling. So next time you're travelling on the A1 and you find yourself needing a little bit of a rest, why don't you take a break at the delightful town of Stamford?
It's like going for a job interview. I'm a little underdressed, a little underprepared. I'm not wearing any trousers either, but that's all right.
So Tom Ronan in Perth, welcome.
Tell
us a bit about yourself, okay. Tom.
Sorry, I overspoke you. My accent gives me away as being someone from the home counties, from a place called Sawbridgeworth, in fact, in Hertfordshire,
okay.
Which is where Beckingham Palace is located.
Yeah.
For those who want to know what is on the map, I've been out. I left there about 25 years ago or so, and I've been out living in Australia, in Western Australia, in Perth. Although, having said that, I had a brief. I was back in the UK for quite a few years, living down in the West Country and up in Aberdeen in the northeast of Scotland for a few years as well. So
okay.
It's been a bit of gypsy blood in there that I obviously didn't know about.
Okay.
But at the moment I am in Perth, Western Australia, which is where I am actually now. But I am actually, the plan is that I'll be relocating back to the UK later on this year, in fact. So
okay, right. So do you know where you're going to be?
In the UK? Well, probably down in Oxfordshire, in Henley on Thames.
Okay. Oh, brilliant. Very nice place.
Yes, just very nice. I mean, I don't know that area very well. I went there last time I was back in the UK, and it's lovely. It's a really lovely part of the world. Gorgeous. So anyway, that's the plan. So that'll be later on this year sometime.
So you're well travelled then?
Well, I don't know about that. I've travelled a little bit, yes.
Okay, so do you want to talk to us about some of the stuff you like, travel-wise?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about from the perspective of being in Australia, which mm-hmm. I suppose would probably be a sort of angle to come from on that. I mean, I've been to other places, you know, a few bits of Europe and the States and stuff. But from an Australian point of view, mm-hmm. I mean, I've travelled around Australia a bit. I mean, I've been over to the eastern states and up to the sort of the Queensland, up to Cairns and all those areas, which is where the sort of the Barrier Reef is and all that sort of stuff. I mean, the thing is with Australia, it's such a vast continent that you've got everything there, really. I mean, from as I say, the Barrier Reef, which is sort of tropical, and then you've got the sort of red centre where the desert is, and then down south you've got snow fields and you know, green valleys and all the rest of it. Such that there's a huge contrast in, you know, everything that's there from a travel perspective. If you want to go to Australia, it's a long way to go, but once you go there, there's an awful lot to see.
Brilliant! Wow.
From my own perspective, from travelling within here, I mean, obviously, I'm in Perth, which is in Western Australia. For your listeners who aren't sure about that, Australia's a large continent down at the bottom of the world, where lots of people like to drink coffee.
Yeah, and a lot of
meals. It's literally taken minutes to make, but
and a lot of desert and.
And a lot of desert. That's the thing about Australia. I mean, it's got a relatively low population anyway, and most of us are all sort of clinging to the coast. You know, a lot of it is fairly inhabitable. But where I am in Perth, I mean, the place that I most like to go from here is actually down to the southwest of Australia, which they call it in Perth. It's called going south. They call it, or down south. I know to call it. Mm-hmm. Which is obviously being Australia. The further south you go, the cooler it is. The further north you go, the warmer it is. Obviously, we're on the wrong side of the planet, and the temperatures are reversed. So the nice thing about down there is the fact that it's not that far from Perth. I mean, I'm talking about an area of the southwest of Australia was probably about the size of England, I would say, maybe a little bit bigger. So to give your listeners, or listener, if it's just me, to give some perspective on it, it's probably about the size of England, to give you an idea of the scale. So with a population of probably, I don't know, 100,000 people, something like that. So it's a big area with not a lot of people living there, basically. So the nice thing about it down there is the fact that it's cooler down there. So it's quite green, sort of rugged. There's a lot of forest areas around there in an area called Pemberton, but there's all these massive carry trees down there, which are spectacular to see. That just goes for, you know, thousands of acres. It's amazing. And the actual coastline along there is very lovely as well. You go down to, there's a place called Margaret River, which for surf fans, and I know you're a bit of a fan of the surf, Dave, having been to, well, I've seen you in a wetsuit. I don't know if that makes you a surfer, but
yes,
I have seen you in a wetsuit. For surfing fans, will know that Margaret River is one of the top surf spots in the world. It's a fantastic thing to see. I was down there in the wintertime, because obviously wintertime is the time for surfing.
Higher waves.
They come in, and I was down there this winter gone, and these guys were out surfing, and just, I mean, it wasn't even a particularly big day, and yet the waves would have been, I don't know, 3 or 4 metres high, and you could just, and they're out there, it's quite offshore, so they've got to swim a fair way to get out to the break. It's not, and you just see this little dot with this massive towering wave behind them. It's something to see. It's a fantastic spot. I mean, to be honest, just seeing the ocean down there, particularly in the wintertime, is just it's just fantastic. Just seeing this massive wild ocean down there is gorgeous. So Margaret River's a really nice place, and the other nice thing about it down there is there's a lot of for those of you who like a drop of wine, and I know I clued you among those, Dave, just a drop, is the Margaret River wine region, where there's some fantastic wineries down there, which are for sale in Tesco's and Waitrose, because I've seen them there. And,
fantastic. What brands are you talking about?
There's quite a few. There's Voyager is one of the larger ones, Voyager Wines. There's... There's one called Moss Wood, which is a really nice one. I mean, there's a number of them.
Yeah,
there's a number of them, of West Australian wines,
okay.
which are lovely, fantastic,
wow.
really good stuff. In fact, cheaper to buy in the UK than they are to buy here. Amazingly enough,
that's bizarre,
I know that sounds extraordinary,
it?
But it's actually there's bottles of wine from Western Australia which are actually cheaper to buy in the section of Tesco's than they are here. But that's what a booming economy will do for you in Australia, and a somewhat down a hill economy in the UK will do for you.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
There's a lot of disadvantages. So that's the Margaret River region, which is a fantastic place to visit, to travel to. Down from there, there's a place called Augusta, these are all quite small places, which is fantastic for the if you ever want to go whale watching.
Wow, really?
Which is a wonderful place. Yeah, you get the humpbacks and the humpback whales and the southern right whales. They come there over the winter time in Australia. They come up from the Southern Ocean, up from the Antarctic, and they're calves there because the water's calmer. And you can go out there, and you just see hundreds of them out there, which is a fantastic thing to see, because so often it's all doom and gloom when it comes to whales.
Not the country.
I'll stand by that. No, I won't.
Yes.
But.
It's
fantastic to be able to see, and you see the guys down there, and they say, if you go out one of these tours out there, they said that the numbers have increased every year. It's good to see something positive, the numbers are up.
And take lots of footage on your shaky handheld camera.
Absolutely pathetic footage. Anyone who's seen, I did post a little bit of footage from the last time I was down there, and it was pitiful.
But it looks amazing. It looks wild, rugged, and quite...
It's extraordinary. And down from there, actually, if you carry on down the coast from there to the point where you're actually down on the sort of real southern coast of Australia, facing down as opposed to facing west.
Facing Antarctica, I suppose, it would be, yeah.
Yeah, there's a place called Albany down there, which is basically kind of like you really do feel that you're at the edge of the world down there. It has that feel to it. It's an extraordinary place. There's a whaling station there, actually, which is, much as that sounds, quite a grim place to go and see, which it is quite an extraordinary place. I think they were operating it until until about the mid-70s. It was still actually a whaling station there. And what's interesting about it is the fact that when it closed, they basically left it completely in situ. So and there's a museum there now, but when you go look at it, it's exactly as it was, the day they kind of stopped working there.
Good Lord.
And it's a very images. It's quite a horrible place. It's a fascinating thing to go and see, really, because it's built. The reason they put it there is there's a natural slope into the ocean there. So what would happen is the ships would go out and harpoon the whales and then attach them to the side of the boat, attach them to these big buoys or sort of balloon things, leave them floating out in the water, and then they'd winch them up this natural sort of incline to where they chop them up. I mean, it's horrible, but extraordinary. And they said that in the days when there was a whaling station, the sea around there would be entirely red with blood, filled with sharks from all over the place coming. I mean, it's absolute vision of the worst thing you could possibly imagine. Fortunately, now you go down there, just as a historical interest place, it's quite extraordinary. But as I say, you do feel you're standing on the edge of the world, because there's nothing there beyond there. It's Antarctica. That's all that's out there across the ocean.
Wow.
So it's and the other thing about which I particularly like down that whole region down there, this sort of the southwest, is the fact that it's so pristine, it's so unspoilt. I mean, Australia is remote from the rest of the population of the world pretty much on its own. Once you get to Western Australia, it's another degree of remoteness. Once you get down to a place like that, you're talking about a real proper pristine wilderness, and you go down there, and it's a total privilege to be there, because there's just no signs of. There's no signs of people being there, really, which is, in some ways you feel kind of guilty about being there, because you think, gee, wouldn't it be nice just to not be here and just leave this to the natural wonders of the world, the animals and everything, to get on with it. But, there's no rubbish, there's no cars around, there's no sea, there's no ships out at sea, there's no planes in the sky, because there's nowhere to fly to. It's just an amazing feeling you get down there. It's just, nothing around, no campsites, no rubbish, no litter, nothing. It's just extraordinary. So, anyway, so that was question one.
Fantastic. Yes, indeed. Gosh. So definitely Western Australia, and heading south from there for some of the slightly more remote and rugged climbs.
That appealed to me. It's very remote. It's very, very unsport, and it's you know, there's something very special about it. I mean, another place that I would mention talking about Perth is Rottnest Island.
Oh, yes.
Which is a contrast to that, which is actually only 30 minutes on a ferry from Perth itself, or from the coast out to Rottnest Island, which is a small island. It's called Rottnest because, which is actually Dutch for rat's nest. Ah. Because originally, when the first Dutch settlers came here, they went over there, and there's a small marsupial that lives on Rottnest called quokkas.
Oh, yes.
Which are like a little small sort of kangaroo, which they're really cute. They're about the size of a sort of a big rabbit standing on its hind legs. They hop, they're a marsupial, so they carry their babies in a pouch, and they've got a sort of a leathery sort of tail. And these Dutch settlers thought they were giant rats, and so, so they called it rats. In fact, they're a marsupial only found on this little island. Again, it's. I mean, it's a lovely place. It's quite a contrast to sort of where I was talking about before, which is the sort of rugged coast. This is much more the sort of, you know, crystal clear water, still sandy bay type, you know, setup. Again, very unspoilt. It's only quite small, the island. No cars on it, which is nice. A few service vehicles driving around, but other than that, you know, you either walk or you go on bicycles. So there's no traffic. You know, you can cycle around it. It's very low key. There's not, you know, it's not been sort of built on as such. There's some sort of low key accommodation that you can stay on overnight. You know, there's a shop and there's a pub, you know, a few coffee shops. So there's a few, you know, sort of amenities and stuff like that. But after that, once you get away from those, you know, you've just got these, you know, these beautiful little bays, white, this is sort of, you know, picture postcard type stuff, sandy bays, crystal clear water, fantastic for snorkeling. And I have never once gone snorkeling there and not said I got no spit and spat at my face mask, which is a reference. All your Jaws fans.
That's definitely
two of them. I don't know if there's any others. But
definitely on my top five films, I would say. But anyway,
totally.
That's another fantastic.
And the thing about that, I mean, Rottnest is it's very close to Perth. I mean, literally, you know, you could be standing in the centre of Perth, you know, outside the front of, I don't know, the Prada store or whatever, and an hour later you could be isolated on a little beach with no one around. I mean, it's, you know, fantastic.
Terrific.
Particularly if you stay over there a night, first thing in the morning, you kind of feel that you've got the place to yourself, and that the sand has washed away all the footprints from the night before, and it's just, you know, it all starts again. It's fantastic. But it has got a lot of poison snakes there.
Okay, that's a nice little footnote there, just in case. Fantastic. So it really sounds like quite a fantastic place to visit. And of course, Perth itself, a big city, lots to do, lots of things to see.
Well, it is. I mean, Perth itself is not a big city per se. I mean, I don't know what the population of Western Australia is, probably only, I don't know, 2.5 million, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, given the size of it, I mean, if you look at the map and see the size of, I mean, to give you some idea of the, Perth is the most isolated city in the world. It's actually closer from London to Moscow than it is from Perth to Sydney, for example, to give you an idea of how remote it is. I mean, it takes like 3 days just to get out of the state. It's a 3 full-day drive, 2 nights, 3 days, just to get out of Western Australia to get across into the border to South Australia. So talking about some serious remoteness and distance.
Yeah.
Perth itself, as a consequence to that, Perth has to kind of have everything here because it's very isolating, and you're not just going to pop to, I mean, you can go to Sydney for the weekend flyover or whatever, but you're not going to drive to the, you know, to another big city, you know, for the day. It's not happy, you're here type thing. So, so it's a very modern city, you know, very sort of, they always talk about sort of climate and lifestyle when they talk about Perth, because it's, you know, it's very clean, very modern, very prosperous. What's happened to slightly getting off the travel theme here, talking more world economics, but, you know.
Whatever.
Never let the chance to sprout off in front of a microphone stop you from going off-piste. Because of the resources boom they've had in Australia, particularly in Western Australia, iron ore particularly, which they dig out of the ground up in the top of Western Australia, selling to the sort of Chinese economy, which has obviously been booming for the last few years. You know, Australia's ridden on the back of that, and so the economy here in Australia's been absolutely booming for the last few years. It's really odd to be somewhere, to sort of, you know, go back to the UK, and it's kind of, you know, triple dip recessions and doom and gloom and cut. And has been like that for a while, and that seems unfortunately to be kind of ongoing at the moment. To then come back here and it's all, you know, people buying new cars and, you know, everything's sort of overpriced and, you know, like sort of boomtown. It's quite strange really, but you know, Australia's completely avoided the you know, the credit crunch, the world recession entirely, particularly Western Australia. So Perth's been very, very, very sort of vibrant in the last few years. A lot of development going on here, putting new things up and the rest of it. So, you know, it's quite a small place, but very livable. It's got the Swan River, which is sort of the basis of the city. You've got some lovely beaches, just city beaches, which are close to get to. You know, lots happening, you know, the, you know, sort of bit of a sort of used to, when I first came out to in the late 80s, it was a little bit of a cultural desert, but that has changed in recent years. There's a lot more things happening in the sort of arts and bands come to stay and the rest of it. So I went to see Neil Young a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Sorry,
getting
off.
Gosh, yes. So basically, I know the gold rush. Welcome to the gold rush. I mean, it's an interesting thing because I guess it's come up in the last, I don't know, 20 years as quite a major destination these days.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's certainly, I mean, as a sort of gateway to the sort of Asia from Australia. I mean, you've got, you know, all the cities of Asia. I mean, Perth's the closest point of contact for that. So, yeah, it's, I mean, the rest of Australia's done pretty well, you know, as an economy in the last few years. But certainly Western Australia has, you know, has changed out all recognition even since I've been here. So it's, you know, but it's a long way to come. I mean, it's for people coming here on holiday. I mean, generally speaking, if people are coming from Europe, from the UK to Australia, that, you know, that generally speaking, they're going to go to Sydney because, you know, is the same way that if you were coming from the States to the UK and you hadn't been before, you'd want to go to London. You know, you want to see, you know, the Opera House and this kind of iconic Australian thing. So Perth tends not to be on people's maps as much because there isn't, you know, there's not, you know, the one big thing that you'd go and see there. It tends to be the sort of place that people would go if they'd been lucky enough to come to Australia on a few trips and wanted to get over here because it's a long way away. But I suppose that works for it and against it in some ways because, you know, when you do get here, if you do make the effort to get here, there's a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of distance to cover as well. So,
brilliant.
It's
fantastic. Tom Ronan, thank you very much.
Oh, is that it? Okay, I'm getting paid for this, aren't I?
Tom Ronan there, talking from Perth in Western Australia via Skype. If you know nothing about Australia, of course, for more information, you could always go to Bill Bryson's amazing book, Down Under. And, of course, I'll probably be reviewing Bill Bryson's work on travel in another podcast. Deep in the heart of the Vendée countryside in France is an attraction which takes the concept of a theme park and turns it into something very special indeed. An hour and a half away from La Rochelle, or an hour south of Nantes, is the park known as Le Puy du Fou. Very loosely translated as the Well of the Fool, the Puy du Fou boasts a series of historical spectacles, each of which seemed to outdo the previous one. Staffed by an array of glamorous acrobats and actors, you enter through the reconstruction of a town in 1900 to find a quiet pastoral village being attacked from the river by a Viking longboat, a medieval jester conjuring show, a live jousting tournament, which somehow also manages to encapsulate the progress of French civilization from castles to chateaux. Distressed damsels are rescued by knights. A horde of several hundred exotic birds are released to fly in exquisite patterns around the skies before returning to their perches, and in one spectacle, you queue for several minutes before being ushered into a life-sized Roman Colosseum. Yeah, really. Once inside the Colosseum, you're addressed by the Roman governor before the games begin. Games which include a horde of Christians who are about to be sacrificed to gladiators and lions before they are then rescued by a gallant general who then proclaims he has been converted to Christianity by the love of his life and who is then stripped of his uniform and subjected to several trials himself by the evil governor, including a chariot race which echoes the epic set piece in Ben-Hur, complete with chariot wheels falling off. It really is absolutely stunning. Since we went as a family in 2004, they've added more spectacles. There's a show about the Three Musketeers, there's one about the Knights of the Round Table. Quotes, having slayed the dragon and conquered Excalibur's spell, Arthur discovers the wonders of the Enchanted Lake. Can't imagine what that's like, but I'm sure it's fantastic. There are other feature famous French storyteller. There are performing fountains, shops, restaurants, a reconstructed medieval town, a village from the 19th century. And of course, at night, the whole park comes to life with an astonishing, spectacular firework show. It's all in French, but somehow that really doesn't matter because the stories all come alive visually anyway. So no matter why you may find yourself travelling to the centre of France, whether in the Vendée itself or if you're en route to the Dordogne or the south somewhere, take a couple of days out. It takes that many to appreciate the park in all its glory, to visit the park of the Puy du Fou. It is amusing, enjoyable, engaging, bewildering, educational, and above all, entertaining. And it's perfect fun for everyone in the family. Check out their website, http://puydufou.com. That's P-U-Y-D-U-F-O-U. So puydufou.com/en to see the English version. Unless you want the French version, of course, which is perfectly up to you. So on their website, you can see the film previews of all the shows that they do. The kids will absolutely love it. Almost 10 years on, my sons are in their 20s and we still talk about it now. Some of the responses to the travel theme. Andy Barron says, in New York, the 48th Street music shops filled with American Stratocasters, you can cry with joy there. He also mentions Moscow. He says, all the pastel-coloured buildings around Red Square makes you think Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen made it over in a bizarrely over-budget episode of Changing Rooms. Talking of pastel-coloured buildings, that seems to be a theme in some of Eastern Europe. The beautiful town of Levoča in Slovakia, which will be the theme of another podcast episode, I'm sure, also has pastel-coloured buildings. So it must be a theme in that area. And of course, other people mentioned Dorset, which again will be the subject of another podcast. And of course, the coast at Suffolk will as well. Oh, and by the way, if you don't know what a quokka is, it is a small Australian marsupial, as Tom Ronan said, but they are incredibly cute. Go into Google and type in quokka, Q-U-O-K-K-A, and have a look at the photos. They're lovely. And that brings us to the end of this episode of Stuff We Like. Remember, if you want to contact me, you can either get through to me on Twitter at David Simmons, or alternatively, try emailing dhsimmons@outlook.com and mark your email Stuff We Like.